Hello, everyone. Very happy Sunday evening. If you hear any screaming in the background, do not be alarmed. Jasmine got a new iPhone today, and she's having trouble getting all of her music and apps and stuff on the new iPhone, and she's starting to get frustrated. So do not be alarmed. It's just, I call it a new phone frustration. I'm sure we've all been there. New phone frustration. So I'm going to start us off this evening with a song. This song is from the Beatles. It's called The Fool on the Hill.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool. And he never gives an answer, but the fool on the hill sees the sun going down, and the eyes in his head see the world spinning round. Well, on the way, head in a cloud, the man of a thousand voices talking perfectly loud, but nobody ever hears him or the sound he appears to make, and he never seems to notice what the fool on the hill sees. And the eyes of his head see the world spinning round.
We are going to be looking at the seven steps to awakening along with my journal entries that I wrote as I contemplated these quotes. I've just put a link in the room. It's a link to my journal for 656 because quote 656 is where we are going to be starting this evening. This is from step three of the seven steps of awakening, the Supreme Yoga. So, let me read quote 656 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. In this world, the cause of all misfortunes is only the mind, which is full of sorrow and grief, desire and delusion. Forgetful of self-knowledge, it generates desire and anger, evil thoughts and cravings, which throw the person into the fire of sense objects. That's a little bit long, so what I'll do is read that again. I might even read that a couple of times so that people can really listen. But let's read it again. In this world, the cause of all misfortunes is only the mind, which is full of sorrow and grief, desire and delusion. Forgetful of true self-knowledge, it generates desire and anger, evil thoughts and cravings, which throw the person into the fire of sense objects. That feels like enough. Two times. Feels like enough right now. So what I'm going to do is go to the journal and read my journal entry. This is journal entry 656A, which means it was after my first contemplation of the quote. The mind may seem benign, but it is not. It may appear there is no harm in daydreaming and thinking while showering, cooking, or walking, but this isn't true. The entire world appearance comes from mind. Every idea that one becomes lost in becomes a part of the world play in some way. The answer, the end to all fear, all suffering and all illusion, is not to become lost in the mind. The answer is to remember and keep attention focused on the true self. So, a week or two ago, I was contemplating something. I don't remember what now. And as I contemplated it, you know, when I contemplate, I go very, very deep in the mind. When I contemplate, I see things in the mind, or sometimes even in the heart, the wisdom. I see things in the mind, looking at the mind from wisdom, or I see things in the heart, meaning I realize wisdom, that isn't as conscious for me when I'm kind of out and about in the world, more in the mind, you know. So like during those times of contemplation, I go much deeper. And there's just a lot more clarity than there seems to be once I'm back out and about again, which is the reason for going in for the contemplation. So on this particular day when I was on the contemplation and I was very, very deep into the mind with the heart, and I just saw with absolute clarity, without any doubt at all, that I could experience anything I could imagine. Like there was just absolutely no limit. Anything at all. Anything that I could imagine, I could experience. But the interesting thing about that was my heart's response to that realization. My heart's response to that realization was, but I don't want to continue to experience imagination. I want to see what's there when there's no imagination. I want to see what's real. And as I sometimes do, you know, I came out of that contemplation and I felt to make a post. And I think on this particular day I made the post in a Bentinho Massaro group. And I don't remember exactly what I said in the post, but the gist of it was that I could see that I can experience anything that I can imagine. But what I really wanted to know is what's there. You know, or I don't remember the exact words I used, what's there or what's left when all imagining is taken away. And I only remember one person commenting. It's possible that others commented and I didn't look, because it, to be honest, I don't always pay full attention. Sometimes I just post things and leave them. So the only group I really pay full attention to is the Ask Regina group. All the others, it's kind of, you know, on and off attention. But I did see one comment that was made, and the person said something like, you can't know truth. It's unknowable. You can only experience the imagination. So why not just imagine whatever you want and have fun? And I think that's a perfectly fine answer for some people. I'm not at all knocking that answer. I think that answer is perfectly fine. But what I found is when it hit me, there was a sense of emptiness in it. Like, no, that's not enough. It's not enough to just say, you can't know truth, so have fun. It's not enough. It's not enough. Right? It's not enough. And, you know, within a day or two, I don't remember how long, I was again in contemplation. And by the way, anybody who knows anything about Regina Dawn Akers knows she has a fun life. probably more fun than the average bear. Lots of play happens in this life. So, you know, so I know about play. I'm an expert on play. But, you know, as I contemplated, I really saw that play without truth realization, it's like a hollow dog bone. You know, if I give Jamie a dog bone with no marrow in the middle of it, she gets a little bored. You know, she's not interested. She wants a dog bone with marrow in the middle of it, right? That's where the real fulfillment is in that marrow. So I saw that play, fun, we could call it, imagination, without truth realization is like a hollow dog bone. It's hollow. And I saw that truth realization is the marrow. You know, I'm reminded of somebody, I don't know who, somebody once said, first find out who you really are. Then, it might have been Nisargadatta. First find out who you are, who you really are, and then do whatever comes to you to do. Don't do it the other way around. You know, don't imagine what you think will be the most fantastic life in the world and create that, whether it's through the old-fashioned hard work or whether it's through the newfangled, you know, new age manifestation. Don't go off on this path of creating what you think you want life to be when you don't even know yourself. And if you think about that, that makes perfect sense. In fact, isn't that what happens to a lot of first marriages? Don't a lot of people get married too young? They don't even know themselves yet. So how can they pick out a partner for life when they don't even know their self yet? So they get married based on some kind of attraction, something pretty surface level. It looks like what they want. But as they mature and they start realizing what's deeply important to them, they often look at their partner and they find out, we're not connected. We're not connected. And so there's a breakup that happens. And the second marriages, again, they don't always work, but the second marriages seem to have more success when people get married a little older in life because they know themselves better. Well, this is talking about the same principle on a whole nother idea, a whole nother level. You know, find out who you really are. Find out your true self first. Make sure you know that beyond the possibility of forgetting. I mean, beyond the possibility of slipping back into believing you are this personality is what I mean by that. Find out who you are first. And then whatever. You know, can't even talk about what the whatever is at this point. And in fact, hold on, I'm going to grab something. This morning I was reading from a book called The Spiritual Teachings of Ramana Maharshi. And someone else asked him a question. Let me see if I can find it. Here it is. This person is asking, is it possible, right? Is it possible to know and remain as the true self? Right? Without slipping back into forgetfulness, without slipping back into believing you are the personality. Here's Ramana Maharshi's answer. Without yielding to the doubt, is it possible or not? One should persistently hold on to the meditation of the true self. Right? In other words, Ramana Maharshi is saying, don't even entertain the idea of the question, is it possible? Because if you entertain the idea of the question, is it possible? You know, the ego is going to take you off onto some type of a thought process that is keeping you in the ego, in the mind, and away from the true self. And maybe that's kind of what I felt when that one person in the Bentinho group commented about, you know, the person said, you know, that's not even possible, so instead just, you know, just have fun. It's like, oh, that's not enough. It's not enough. I mean, I know how to have fun. Don't get me wrong. This is not a girl who does not know how to play. I've played all weekend this weekend. It's not enough, is what I'm saying. Now, what started me on all of that is I was reading 656A. Is that the first line of 656A says, the mind may seem benign, but it is not. When we go off into our imagination, if we are really attempting to manifest our best imagination, and we go into our imagination without first knowing who we are, we may also, for example, be completely unaware of the fears, the doubts, the judgments that are underlying our imagination. So let's assume for a moment that I have a very strong belief that I am unworthy, a very strong belief that I am unworthy. And you know, what I seek is happiness because that's what everyone seeks. And when I look out in the world, I see these rich people who dress fine and, you know, jet set travel all over the world and go to parties. And without me being fully aware of it, something in me says, if I was like them, then I would be worthy, right? And so I go about maybe through a combination of hard work and New Age manifestation. I go about creating this dream of being wealthy and well-dressed and beautiful and traveling and going to parties. Why won't that work for me? It won't work for me because I didn't know myself when I started. It won't work for me because the core of the whole plan was the belief that I'm unworthy and I'm trying to make myself worthy. So that means all that that plan is, even if it comes into full manifestation, all that plan is a plastic mask, a plastic mask on top of the belief that I am unworthy. And it's always in danger of falling apart. And so there's always a stress. There's always a manipulation that has to happen. You know, there's maybe continuing dreams when I get there. There's not the fulfillment that I was seeking, so there has to be more dreams. I mean, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. So even if I can experience anything I can imagine. It's never going to work. The only thing that's going to work is to know the truth about myself, the truth about who I am, the truth, period. What is the truth? That's the only thing that's going to work. What is the truth? And all of the teachings, all of the time, tell us that the thing that is covering up the truth is the mind, is the imagination. That is the veil. To say that the truth is the only thing that can make me happy isn't exactly a true statement, but it's an okay sentence. The truth really is the realization of what I am, which one of those ways we could define that if we wanted to is happiness itself, right? And happiness itself cannot be unhappy. But all of my imagination covers up the realization of the fact that I am happiness itself. And so more imagining can't be the answer. The only thing that can be the answer is to learn to let go of the imagining, to become very, very empty, to go within, to look for the truth. I call it before anything, before any ideas, and come to know myself. Once I know myself, right, then happiness is natural because, you know, just like sugar is sweet, happiness is happy. So, the mind may seem benign, but it is not, because the mind is what's covering up the truth of what we are. The mind is the cause of all of our problems. And to continue to use the mind to seek for the answers is foolishness, since the mind itself is the problem. The mind may seem benign, but it is not. It may appear there is no harm in daydreaming and thinking while showering, cooking, or walking, that this isn't true. The entire world appearance comes from the mind. Every idea that one becomes lost in becomes a part of the world play in some way. So if we go back to my previous example about I feel deeply, deeply unworthy, but I'm not, I mean, I'm aware of it, but I'm not aware of it. I'm not aware of it with awareness, right? Because I think I am deeply, deeply unworthy. I think that's who I am. And what I want to do is change that. I want to change from what I am to something better. And again, I think that these rich people who dress well and travel and go to parties, they're worthy in my imagination. So I'm getting myself into that life. But the root of everything that I'm doing to move myself into that life, the root of all of that is an extreme belief in unworthiness. Which means the real flavor of everything that I'm doing, the real flavor of all of my imagining, of all of my working, of all of my manifesting, the real flavor, the cloud that surrounds it, is the cloud of unworthiness. And so that picture continues to get painted in the world, the picture of unworthiness. And so now let's fast forward, 15, 20 years, and I'm rich, and I'm well-dressed, and, I'm married to somebody famous. Everything, quote, is going my way, but I'm, there's this stress, there's this unhappiness, there's this fear that I'm always going to lose it all. But in addition to that, I have a child. And what I see in my child is something that I think isn't good enough. You know, because that unworthiness belief is still hidden in me, and now I see it in my child. There's something about her that is not good enough. I don't know what it is, but something. And now that fear starts coming up again. And just like I made my plastic mask, I gotta make hers. I gotta hide from the world her reality that she's not as good as everyone else. See, this is what I'm seeing. Because that was never healed. So now it's showing up. And so I start trying to create a plastic mask for my daughter in whatever ways. I put her in dance lessons. I take her to all the right parties. When she starts acting a little strange, I take her to all the right psychiatrists. I do whatever, whatever, whatever. And what I don't understand is that the entire time I am somehow communicating to my daughter, you are not good enough. And although I never use those words, she gets the message clear. She gets the message clear. And by the time she's 13, she's taking drugs. She's going out with older men. She's having sex. She's starting to travel down this very, very painful path because she grew up to believe that she was unworthy. The mind may seem benign, but it is not. It may appear there is no harm in daydreaming and thinking while showering, cooking, or walking, but this isn't true. The entire world appearance comes from the mind. Every idea that one becomes lost in becomes a part of the world play in some way. And are we even aware of the ideas that we're actually lost in? You know, when we're fantasizing about being rich or whatever fantasies we engage in. Do we know what's underneath them? Do we know what kind of a cloud they are creating? Do we know what is going to be painted in the world or what is currently being painted in the world as a result of this thinking that we're doing? I would say no, we're not aware. We're not aware of the grievances. We're not aware of the judgments. We're not aware of the fears. We're not aware of the doubts. We're not aware of the beliefs that we have to control and manipulate. And all this stuff, this, you know, this junk is just being, you know, recycled within us and within the world picture. So again, it may seem like I'm doing nothing, daydreaming about being rich someday while I'm brushing my teeth. But this is saying it's not benign. It's not benign. Problems are being created. Problems are being created as a result of this mind that we're so engaged in. The answer, the end to all fear, all suffering, and all illusion is not to become lost in the mind. The answer is to remember and keep attention focused on self. This is what I saw when I was very, very deep in contemplation, that I could experience anything I could imagine, anything, anything. There were no limits on what I could experience, none. Not a single solitary limit anywhere. But none of it was the truth. And none of it could do what the truth can do, what truth realization can do. And so what I saw was that instead of imagining and creating the best life I could imagine, it'd be better to move in the other direction, to learn how to break the habit of imagining. Break the habit of daydreaming, to let all of the clouds clear away, and to discover what's there then, when there are no clouds left, right? None. The mind may seem benign, but it is not. It may appear there is no harm in daydreaming and thinking while showering, cooking, or walking, but this isn't true. The entire world appearance comes from mind. You know, I don't know if I've ever said this during a Seven Steps teaching. I know that I've said this before. I just don't remember where, but when ISIS first started hitting the U.S. news in a big way, which wasn't that long ago, right? It's only been about 6 months or so since ISIS has really been in the forefront of the news. Well, of course, you know, they came into the news when they started chopping off the heads of people, right, with the knife. And this is when they really started getting attention, when they started sending those videos to Obama. And then, of course, there was the Jordanian man that they burnt alive. And then we've heard stories of others being burnt alive. We've heard stories of, I think, crucifixions. We've heard stories that they crucify some people. You know, so the stuff they're doing, not nice. I think we can all agree, not nice. And so I looked at that and I thought, you know what? What in me, and I wouldn't say this is just me, the body of Regina. I would also say this is us, right? The totality. But of course, I can only look here. So what in me could possibly be a part of creating an appearance like that? And I just let that question hang. And I don't remember how long it hung. You know, it may have been days, it may have been weeks, I don't remember. But at some point, I think I might have seen an ISIS video or something, and the message, of course, was that they were right and everyone else was wrong, and that they were going to clean up the world by getting rid of all the disbelievers. And then it really would be a better world. This is their belief system. That it really would be a better world. But listen to that first idea. Just listen to this first idea. I am right, and they are wrong. Can you find that in you anywhere? I am right, and they are wrong. Or I am right, and he is wrong. Or I am right, and she is wrong. I remember even my dad, and my dad I would perceive to be a good man. But I remember even my dad, when I was a kid, used to say, you know, if everybody would think like me, we wouldn't have any problems. Isn't that what ISIS is saying? If everybody would think like us, there wouldn't be any problems anymore. The world would be good. You see, this belief, I am right, they are wrong. If everybody thought like me, it would be a better world. This belief lives in us. And when, you know, have we ever noticed when we're showering or doing dishes or walking or talking to someone, do we ever stop and notice when that thought is alive and when that thought is being activated, literally activated? I'm thinking about, you know, somebody and what she said, and oh my gosh, she is so wrong. How can I convince her that she's wrong and that I'm right about this? Why doesn't she see how wrong she is? You know, doesn't this happen sometimes in your thinking? And again, it may seem very benign, but it's not. That's what this thought is saying. It's not benign, because that goes out and creates the world. And just imagine this for a moment. Imagine all of us with our apparently benign ideas, I'm right, she's wrong, whatever, all coming together and somehow manifesting the thought that becomes ISIS. That's not very benign. If you ask me, that's not benign at all. So although by comparison, because I haven't chopped anybody's head off, I haven't burnt anybody alive, thank God, I haven't crucified anyone. By comparison, my little I'm right thought seems completely different than theirs. It isn't. It isn't. Theirs is just a concentration of ours. And that's only one example. You see, this mind is not innocent. This mind is not benign. This mind is the cause of all problems. And that thinking that we do, that daydreaming that we do, that is unexamined, well, it needs to go. We need to become done with it. So instead of imagining anything that I might want to experience, it seems better for me to learn to stop the imagining, stop the thinking, stop the believing, stop the mental spinning, let all of the clouds clear, and see what's left. Again, 656A says, the mind may seem benign, but it is not. It may appear there is no harm in daydreaming and thinking while showering, cooking, or walking, but this isn't true. The entire world appearance comes from mind. Every idea that one becomes lost in becomes a part of the world play in some way. The answer? The end to all fear, all suffering, and all illusion is not to become lost in mind. The answer is to remember and keep attention focused on the true self. And that's really the same as the answer that Ramana Maharshi gave, which I read this morning, right? When this person said, is it possible, right, for one to remain as the pure self? Ramana said, without yielding to the doubt, is it possible or not, one should persistently hold to the meditation on the self, right? Don't even follow that train of thought. Not even that thinking is benign. Especially if it leads you to the end conclusion that it's not possible, therefore I might as well just stay in mind. Right? It's not going to be helpful. I'm going to scroll down and click on 656B. And 656B is further contemplation of the same quote. So let me read the same quote again. In this world, the cause of all misfortunes is only the mind, which is full of sorrow and grief, desire and delusion. Forgetful of true self-knowledge, it generates desire and anger, evil thoughts and cravings, which throw the person into the fire of sense objects. That's the quote that we're looking at. So let me look at 656B in my journal. The person is not real. It is a part of the dream. Everything that happens to the person is not real. It is a part of the dream. Both good and bad, happy and sad. The dream comes from the mind. Abandoned the mind, and one abandons the idea of person. With no idea of person, there is no one who can suffer. There is no potential for suffering. All right, so that goes back to what I said I saw deep within myself. When I saw with absolute clarity and not a shred of doubt that I could, that the power is here, I could experience anything that I could imagine. And in fact, I'm not going to sit here and give a list because I have no interest in doing so, but my life now is the result of imagining that's happened in this lifetime. I can just look around and I can see the details. I can see it perfectly. even the idea of having a job where I wrote, where I work from home, writing courses and teaching, that's happening now. It's happening through Awakening Together, but that was a dream of mine many years ago. Someone once asked me, what would be your dream job? And I said, oh, I'd like to work from home, just writing courses and teaching them. That was my dream job. Well, it's here. I'm doing it. You know, and that's just one. I could go detail after detail. I could spend the next, 30, 40, 50 minutes just telling you all the stuff that is a part of my life that I imagined, that I wanted, that I dreamed about, and it's here. So I know that that can happen, right? I know that. It's not a question. And there's nothing wrong with what's here now. I don't have any complaints about it. I like where I live. I like the work that I do. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. But the true desire of the heart is not yet satisfied. You see? The marrow of the bone is not yet here. Because the full and complete realization of self has not occurred. And nothing less can satisfy me. Doesn't mean that I'm unsatisfied, because actually I'm quite happy. So it sounds kind of funny. It makes it sound like maybe I'm frustrated or dissatisfied, but actually I'm quite happy and quite content, and yet I still know that this needs to happen. This self-realization, this is still, this still needs to happen. That's all I can say. Sometimes things are very difficult to put into words. So the person is not real. Well, Regina has realized her dream. But how can that be enough when Regina, maybe 40 years from now, maybe less, maybe a little more, is going to die? How can the fact that Regina realized her dreams really matter at all? I don't see how it does. It doesn't hurt that Regina has realized her dreams. I mean, it's nice. There's nothing wrong with the fact that Regina has realized her dreams. But again, it's not the marrow. The marrow of the bone. It's not that. Because it's only a temporary thing. Regina herself is going to end. So her dreams are nothing. Jesus in the Bible pointed toward eternal life, the promise of eternal life. And in fact, any Christian can tell you that in order to realize eternal life, you must be born again. But what is born again? What is born again? Born again is awakening to who you truly are. Right? You're not the person, the flesh, Jesus called it. You're not the flesh. You're the spirit, and you must be born to spirit. You must awaken to who you are. And this isn't something you can imagine yourself into. Now, with that said, some of these same skills that are used to imagine and manifest can actually be quite helpful, I think, on the path of awakening. Such as trusting that awakening is happening, I think, is much better than saying, I'm not good enough, it's not going to happen for me. I don't see how those thoughts are at all helpful. Just trusting that it is happening. When I sat down even just to begin meditating a month and a half ago, when I could not meditate at all, I sat down with the trust that if I just committed to doing it, that meditation would happen. The meditation would be learned. How to meditate would be realized. Gratitude is another part of the manifestation process that I think can be very, very helpful in awakening. Being grateful for this true desire. Being grateful for this calling to realize the true self. Being grateful for any glimmers, any glimpses of the true self that I have. Be grateful every time I see another false belief or obstacle in my mind so that I can let it go. You know, so some of these skills that people use to manifest, the skills are applied to imagination in order to manifest. Some of those same skills without the imagination, subtract the imagination part, I think are still helpful to awakening. So like I don't use trust and gratitude and imagine what awakening looks like. See, I don't do the imagining part. I use the trust and the gratitude. I also think that happiness is extremely helpful. Something about the vibration of happiness, joy. And so let's say I'm not happy. Let's say I'm not joyful in the way that we imagine it. You know, like let's say that I got a new phone today and I'm very frustrated. And this didn't happen. Jasmine got the new phone. But let's say that I got the new phone and I'm very frustrated because I can't get my music and my recordings and all this stuff to show up on my phone. And I'm very frustrated. I can actually pause within myself for a moment, remember my purpose, and either immediately shift into peace, or I can begin to look at the experience of being frustrated in a curious way that brings joy to exploring the experience of frustration, if that makes any sense. You know, Bentinho teaches this about being at your highest possible vibration, feeling as good as you can in an honest and sincere way. And I think that is also somehow very, very helpful. So some of these skills, you could say, that people use in the manifestation process, I find are still helpful in the awakening process. But what has to be taken out of it is the imagination, the specific visioning. I don't want to imagine what awakening is and envision myself as that. In fact, I can't think of a better way to lead myself into a false awakening than making up what it is and imagining myself into that state of mind. You see, the mind is the problem. So I use the trust. I use the gratitude. I stay happy, joyous. You know, Michael Langford refers to the loving all method. That's about the same, the loving all method. You know, I use all of these same skills, but without the imagination. Back to 656B. The person is not real. It is part of the dream. So again, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's okay that Regina's dreams are satisfied, but it's not, it doesn't matter in a big way because again, in 40, 50 years, Regina's gone, right? So it couldn't have mattered that much. It was all pretty temporary. We're looking for what Jesus called eternal life, truth realization. The person is not real. It is a part of the dream. Everything that happens to the person is not real. It is a part of the dream, both good and bad, happy and sad. The dream comes from the mind. Abandon the mind and one abandons the idea of person. With no idea of person, there is no one who can suffer. There is no potential for suffering. And one of the words that I used a moment ago to talk about the self other than the word true self was happiness. It is happiness. How can happiness have a potential for suffering? Happiness is just pure, it's just happy. Happiness itself, it can't suffer. Only the idea of a person who is not happiness itself then has the potential of suffering, right? So I feel like going back and reading 656A and 656B side by side, and so that is what I'm going to do. 656A says, "The mind may seem benign, but it is not. It may appear there is no harm in daydreaming and thinking while showering, cooking, or walking, but this isn't true. The entire world appearance comes from the mind. Every idea that one becomes lost in becomes a part of the world play in some way. The answer, the end to all fear, all suffering, and all illusion, is not to become lost in the mind. The answer is to remember and keep attention focused on the true self." 656B. "The person is not real. It is a part of the dream. Everything that happens to the person is not real. It is a part of the dream. Both good and bad, happy and sad. The dream comes from the mind. Abandon the mind and one abandons the idea of person. With no idea of person, there is no one who can suffer. There is no potential for suffering." And now I'm going to read the original quote again from the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is quote 656. "In this world, the cause of all misfortunes is only the mind, which is full of sorrow and grief, desire and delusion. Forgetful of true self-knowledge, it generates desire and anger, evil thoughts and cravings, which throw the person into the fire of sense objects." And so now I'm going to move on to quote number 657 in the Seven Steps to Awakening. "When even the notion of the ego sense has ceased, you will be like the infinite space." Remember I said earlier, let all of the clouds clear and then see what's there. "When even the notion, the idea of the ego sense has ceased, you will be like the infinite space, like the sky." Let's look at the journal entry for 657. "Suffering must happen to an object. Without an object, there is no thing to suffer. No body, no physical pain. No mind, no emotional pain. Formless awareness self cannot suffer because it is not an object. It is nothing that suffering can land against." Now, of course, let's imagine that we have a bow and arrow. We take our bow and arrow and we shoot somebody in the arm. We don't want to hurt anybody, so not seriously. So we just shoot them in the arm. Are they going to feel pain? Yeah, probably immediately. "Ow! Ow! What'd you do that for? Ow!" You know, right? Something. Something's going to happen. But let's take that same bow and arrow and let's shoot that arrow at the sky. Does it have any effect at all? No. No effect at all. You see, this is an example of the advantage of realizing the true self, because then you are the infinite space, like the sky. Nothing can hurt you. And you know what? That's fine what I just said and true, but that's not even the heart of the matter for me. You know what the heart of the matter is for me? The heart of the matter is for me, I just want to know the truth. It's not even about the fact that nobody can hurt me. That's fine, but that has nothing to do with my heart or my purpose. So as soon as I said that, I just felt like I wanted to clarify, this isn't about not being hurt. I'm not sure you can hurt me now anyway. Maybe physically you could. If you ran over me with your car, you'd probably hurt me. But you can call me names and such and, you know, fire me from Awakening Together and, you know, smear my name and NTI's name and Inaramana's name in the mud and drag along any other names that I may appear to value. It's not going to hurt me. If it does, I'm going to use it to awaken. So in that way, it still doesn't hurt me. This isn't about not being hurt. I just want to know the truth. I just want to know the truth. I don't want to know imagination. Why would I want to know imagination? It doesn't make sense to me. It simply refuses to compute that imagination could be as meaningful or as valuable as truth. That's what this is about. That's what this is about. How can I get out of my habitual imagining, even if it's good imagining and good things come of it? Again, I have a good life. If we were to take all of the lives in this world, the, what is it, 6.5 billion lives in this world, and line them up and compare them on a number of different criteria, I am certain that I would be in the top 1%. I'm certain of that. I have a good life. I'm not coming to you as someone who is suffering, saying, oh my God, I want to wake up so that I can quit suffering. I have a good life. What I am saying is, from this good life, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's good. You know, I'm happy that it's here. But it's missing the marrow. Missing the truth in a very real way, not an intellectual way, not an occasional glimpse way. To know myself and everything as it really is. And to not have even the possibility of forgetting. I mean, because it's just all there is. That's what I seek. And I only seek it because it's true. And this is why the mind is not benign. Not just because it creates appearances like ISIS, which are not pretty, and certainly I want to do anything that I can within my own mind to eliminate anything that creates appearances like that, that creates suffering like that. It's not, you know, it's not in my heart to be a part of that. But even that's not the direct reason for my calling. It's not to end suffering, although I can't say I wouldn't want to end suffering, because I would. But again, it's just to know the truth. In fact, do you know what I promised the truth? Do you know what I said to the truth? And I meant it with all of my heart, and I've never taken it back. I told the truth, I want to know what you are. And I don't put any expectations upon you. I mean, if the end of this search is that the truth is that this world is all there is. We're born, we have a good life, or a bad life, or a mixed life, and then we die. Then by God, I want to know that. I want to know what is true, just because it's true. That's what I promised truth. I didn't say you have to look a certain way. I didn't say you have to please me or suit me. I said, I just want to know you. But through my own experience, I'm seeing that the mind is not the truth. That is, if there's anything that's obvious to me, that's obvious. If I want to know the truth, I have to let go of my addiction to the mind, because the mind is covering to the truth. I will never get to it that way. Will I be the infinite space? Will I see myself as the infinite space, as this quote promises, when even the notion of the ego sense, see, the notion means the idea, even the idea of I, Even the idea of me has ceased. I will be like infinite space. Is that true? As far as I know, there's only one way to find out. And that's to let go of this addiction to mind. Stop all of the imagining. Let it all unwind, wind down. Let the clouds clear and find out what's left. All right, I think with that, my time is up. So thank you guys for listening. Bye.